Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome back to News and Views. I'm Rob Schofield. A new report from experts at the advocacy group Disability Rights North Carolina offers a damning assessment of a program our state uses to house prisoners in county jails. At issue is a $22 million initiative administered by the North Carolina Sheriff's Association known as the Statewide Misdemeanant Confinement Program. After an extensive review of public records, the report authors found that some counties have abused the program by unlawfully overcrowding their jails, something that's caused injuries and even deaths, and then reaping thousands or even hundreds of thousands of dollars of, in effect, profit. Earlier this week, I got a chance to explore some of the sobering details of the report with one of the authors, attorney Luke Woolard. Well, Luke Woolard, welcome to News and Views. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So this new and damning report that you've researched and authored, Dangerously Overcrowded and Deadly, talks about an interesting and perhaps worrisome program that's being run in North Carolina to house people who've been convicted of misdemeanors. Tell us about this report and what some of your key findings were.
Certainly. So we have several jails in North Carolina that are overcrowded. Some of them are chronically so. We keep track of that by just keeping track of the numbers that the UNC School of Government puts out. They've been doing it since about 2018. So we knew that some of the jails were overcrowded. But what we then found was that some of them were being paid by the state to house a certain type of misdemeanant in something called the Statewide Misdemeanant Confinement Program, meaning that these jails already overcrowded and already dangerous, both for the folks who are incarcerated there and for the jail staff, were being more overcrowded so that the counties could get money from the program. And the way the program is set up to work is that you have folks who are convicted of misdemeanors. So these are, you know, often thought of as the lesser crimes. People aren't being in, you know, in for years. They're usually in for several months, maybe 6 months. Mm-hmm. And usually folks who are convicted, they stay in the jail before trial. After trial, they're convicted and they would go to a state prison. That's usually where folks go who are convicted. And there you've got both, or you had before, misdemeanants and felons. Statewide Misdemeanor Confinement Program was put into place by the legislature around 2012 so that folks convicted of those misdemeanors, which are, again, some of the lesser crimes and DUI, would actually, instead of going to a state prison, mm-hmm. would stay in local jail facilities. And the idea was that sheriffs and jails that were not overcrowded but had extra beds could volunteer those beds to house these misdemeanors, and for that, the state would repay them. So everybody convicted of certain misdemeanors and DUIs now is automatically enrolled in this program. Wherever they're staying, the state is paying for them. The legislature created a statewide misdemeanor confinement fund that the Sheriff's Association pays out of to the local county facilities that are donating, basically, or volunteering these beds.
So initially, maybe not an outrageous idea, the idea of perhaps housing people rather than sending them off to some faraway prison if they've been convicted of a relatively minor offense. Maybe they could serve their time in the local jail. Maybe doesn't sound like a bad idea.
Absolutely. And there's nothing really wrong with the program if it had a few extra controls in it. And certainly, actually, you know, the program really could be run to actually alleviate overcrowding. You know, maybe, you know, you're a sheriff in a smaller county, not a lot of beds in your jail, but they're not full. So you volunteer some beds, you get some statewide misdemeanor confinement folks, the county gets some money to house them. But then say, you know, suddenly your population really, really increases, you know, suddenly you become overcrowded. Well, you could and probably should then take those folks who were from out of county that you were being paid for and say, hey, we really don't have these beds anymore. We can't volunteer these beds. And then those folks could go to another facility that's volunteering beds that actually does have space for them. And that can happen. There are mechanisms for that to happen. But what we were finding is it often didn't. And so we were seeing a lot of jails that were overcrowded that kept being paid to house the statewide misdemeanor confinement program folks, when really, and what we're hoping ultimately happens is they should not be, you know, statewide misdemeanor confinement folks should not be sent to an overcrowded facility. And if a facility becomes overcrowded, they should not be allowed to keep the statewide misdemeanor confinement folks there and continue to get paid by the state while their jail is dangerously overcrowded.
Talk to our listeners about what the reality of being an overcrowded jail is. It's sort of a vague term, really. Probably a lot of people can't get their arms around. What does an overcrowded facility look like, and what is the impact on the population that's housed there?
Certainly, it looks and is dangerous for everyone, including jail staff there. Now, right. Each jail's capacity, when they build a new jail, DHSR, that's the Department of Health Service Regulation, comes out. Their construction section looks at, you know, things like square footage and how the jail is set up and says, okay, we're going to give you a design capacity of X. And that is the number of folks that you are supposed to stay below or at. If you go above your design capacity, you're overcrowded. Now, several different studies, which we cite in the report, say jails really start to be dangerous at about 80% of that capacity. Reason being, you know, one, you usually would staff the jail, you know, to only be able to handle folks up to that capacity. So if you go over that, you have issues with the jail staff not being able to do all the proper supervision rounds. And most importantly, what they call custody classification, which is this person's coming into the jail, let's look at them and where do they need to be? You know, which block do they need to be on? And, you know, how much restriction do they need to be on? And that becomes difficult to impossible once you start hitting the 80% and then on to 100. Yeah. So we see, you know, through these biannual inspection reports that DHSR does, we read through those. And what we see in these overcrowded facilities often is what you would expect, you know, missed supervision rounds, sometimes just sort of dirty facilities because they can't get in there to clean them. And we see just a lot of dangerous conditions that are made worse when you are overcrowding a facility.
Talking with Luke Woolard, who is on the criminal justice team. He's an attorney at Disability Rights North Carolina on their criminal justice team. Luke, talking about his new report, which is about dangerously overcrowded and deadly local jails in our state. What has been the impact of having these overcrowded facilities? We know it looks like it's kind of a maybe even a profit center for some of these local sheriffs, but it's had some bad impacts on actual human beings who are housed in these facilities.
Yes, certainly. And what we're seeing is, as we say in the report, there have been several deaths in overcrowded facilities, you know, while those facilities were overcrowded. And we see just generally dangerous conditions. We hear about the deaths because DHSR needs to go out, do an inspection. They write up a report saying if the jail followed all the rules they're supposed to, you know, when this person died in the jails. And we get that because that's public record. So not only do we know that, you know, folks are dying in these overcrowded facilities? A lot of these deaths will report supervision failures. So the jail staff did not check on these folks at the intervals that they were supposed to. And often, as the one particular case we cite in the report, that leads to folks not getting medical attention when they should be getting medical attention. Folks who are potentially suicide risk that we see a lot are not adequately watched after or screened when they come into the facility. And really, that's just the deaths, unfortunately, because that's what we hear about. We don't hear about attempted suicides. We don't hear about things that could have happened where potentially someone died from an overdose or didn't. So I really think in terms of the jails being dangerous, especially the overcapacity jails, we're really sort of only seeing the tip of the iceberg, which is what really worried us and made us want to come out with this report. Certainly, we would love to see no jails in North Carolina overcrowded, but we felt in particular jails should not be being paid by the state to house these extra folks when really those folks can go to any other jail that's volunteering beds and really alleviate some of that overcrowding and make it safe for everyone. And that, you know, the program generally should not be sending these folks convicted of relatively minor crimes into these overcrowded facilities when they don't have to go there.
The group that is supposed to be overseeing this and sort of managing it is the North Carolina Sheriffs Association, which is a nonprofit sort of, I don't know, almost like a trade association of the sheriffs in our state. But they've actually been given actual duties when it comes to administering this program. Am I right about that?
Yes, they are supposed to administer the program. They're paid about $1 million a year by the state to do so. And they are supposed to basically keep track of which sheriffs are volunteering beds and who's in the program, keeping track, making sure that there's enough beds in the program. And if there aren't, then people need to then go to DPS. They're supposed to coordinate how these folks get sent from maybe the county where they were convicted to the county that's ultimately going to house them. But it is basically all administrative work. The folks who are actually, you know, picking up the folks, taking them from the county conviction over to the other county are usually the sheriffs of one or the other county. They're compensated for that out of the fund, but the Sheriff's Association really keeps track of the payments, sort of who's where, and making sure that the program has enough sort of volunteer beds in it that it does not go, the program itself does not go over capacity, in which case all that would happen is folks would start then going to DPS prison facilities. But again, in our research, we have not seen a single time in any of the reports that the Sheriff's Association gives to the legislature where the program was ever over capacity. It always seems that they had sort of plenty of beds for the folks who were coming into the program, which makes it even more problematic to us that these folks were still going to overcrowded jails if they had the room, you know, to put them elsewhere in counties that have actually safe facilities.
It's worth pointing out that the people that run the Sheriff's Association are the sheriffs. That's who basically comprise it. So in effect, if you were asking the Sheriff's Association to do anything to crack down or somehow enforce rules or be tougher on local sheriffs, they'd be cracking down on their own members, which seems sort of like not a likely situation.
Well, just what we'd really like to see is, yes, the Sheriff's Association taking control of that, saying we're going to administer it throughout the state. So, hey, if you got an overcrowded jail, or ideally, you know, even if your jail wasn't overcrowded, but maybe has failed a couple of inspections for safety issues, you don't get to house these folks anymore. We're going to send them elsewhere. You know, ideally, we'd also like to see the individualized, the individual sheriffs recognizing that if their jail is overcrowded, then they shouldn't be volunteering beds that they don't have in this program. And if their jail becomes overcrowded, they should be moving these statewide misdemeanor confinement folks out of the jails. So ideally, we would see some controls on either side of that relationship.
We're coming to the end of our time with Luke Woolard of Disability Rights North Carolina, where he serves as a staff attorney. I guess the last question I wanted to ask you, Luke, is you mentioned in the report the fact that a tremendous, perhaps surprising percentage of the people who are housed in these facilities, the people we're talking about, the human beings who are affected here, are people with disabilities. They are people for whom services ought to be a priority when it comes to confining them and hopefully rehabilitating them so that they can lead better lives. But that seems to be another big problem here, is that we're talking about folks who are not receiving services that they might well need.
Mm-hmm. The statistic that we have that's in the report, I believe, is 2 in 5. That number may be higher. A lot of folks with mental health disabilities, unfortunately, a local jail might be the first place that they land where they actually get anywhere close to properly diagnosed. And when you've got these overcrowded facilities, it makes it extremely difficult, one, to give proper accommodations to folks who have physical disabilities. It makes it that much more difficult to make sure that folks with disabilities can get proper medical care. And it makes it much more difficult to screen folks as they come in for things like suicide risk or potential complications from withdrawal, as what happened to Mr. Mallard, the gentleman who we cite in our report, who we would argue was not adequately supervised and ultimately did die from withdrawal in an overcrowded facility.
The new report is entitled Dangerously Overcrowded and Deadly. It's written by Luke Woolard, researched and written by Luke Woolard, who's a staff attorney at Disability Rights North Carolina on their criminal justice team. Luke, thanks so much for being with us. Folks can find the report at disabilityrightsnc.org, right?
Yep, they can find it right there. It's online. Thanks for having me.
We'll talk to you again real soon, hopefully with word of some reforms that our state lawmakers and local sheriffs have implemented in the interim.
We're certainly pushing for them.
Coming up next, the FDA has finally given full approval to Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine. We'll hear from a top national expert on what that means. Stay with us.